You're listening to your community radio station, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Molawa'a, K284AL Hale'iva. It's time for In the Garden on the Farm.
Aloha and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. We're your hosts, Robin and Paul, and on today's show, we will spice up the conversation with our local chili. Take an honest look at the projected impacts of climate change on life in Hawaii, and discuss one of the solutions, water catchment. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you, in partnership with our fine sponsors.
Aloha, Robin.
Aloha, Paul.
Well, it sure has been a wet and watery month here, well in line with our focus on irrigation and water issues. And it's great to be rounding out our discussion today on some of the bigger picture items with climate change and all the beautiful water that comes out of the sky.
Sure. I mean, I guess where you live, because where I live, the Wydelia has been wilting, which...
No
says
kidding.
Really dry weather to me,
really?
With combined with some heavy winds, and I'm definitely hoping for more rain in our zone.
Well, it is not a surprise that there's such a variability here in the Hawaiian Islands, and that makes predictions on climate change difficult to have be accurate. We'll get into some more of the details with a special guest joining us in studio coming up. But right now we're going to jump into our celestial session, looking to the heavens above for inspiration and guidance on our planting, harvesting, and other farming and gardening activities. And we will start with our Hawaiian moon phase of the day, brought to us as always by the 2015 Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar, a great publication from Hanalei Watershed Hui, both available as a beautiful printed wall calendar, but can also be found online as well. The U.S. Naval Observatory Astronomical Applications Department has given us the precise timings, and pretty much all the moon calendars out there rely on that resource. So today's Hawaiian moon is Ole Pau. Ole Pau will rise over Kauai at 3:41 p.m. this afternoon. She'll reach her transit or highest point in the sky at 9:53 p.m. tonight, and she'll set at 4:02 a.m. tomorrow. 84% of the moon's beautiful face will be illuminated. We have the full moon coming up on Sunday at 5:42 p.m. Ole Pau is the 10th moon in the Hawaiian lunar cycle. It's the last day in the unproductive period of Ole moons in Ho'onui, which is the first Anahulu, which also ends on this moon. So this is the last day in the first week of the Hawaiian lunar cycle, which is known as Ho'onui, and will be moving into Poipoi, or the rounding moon. So the beginning of that full moon cycle is coming up tomorrow. Planting recommendations: it's an unproductive day for planting, so lots of other activities other than planting, like pruning and compost making and cleaning up and planning, and maybe even just taking a day off. Could be good.
Sounds great. Well, in the biodynamic look at things, it's planting time, and that means the moon is in its descending phase, heading down towards the bottom, which brings the energies of the plant down and helps them make a good home with their new place, which is always good when we're planting. So today, the moon's in Leo, which is a fire sign, making it time to work with our fruit plants. So I would say given the topic of discussion today, some drought-tolerant fruiting plants like okra, even cucumbers, really don't need a whole lot of water, certainly better off having water just on their roots.
How about nioi?
Nioi would be also, I would consider, a very drought-tolerant, beautiful perennial pepper, which we'll talk about a little bit later in more depth. Thursday through Saturday, the moon will take its long journey through Virgo, an earth sign, making it a good time to work with our root plants. So depending on where you live, I certainly grow beets all year long pretty well where I live. And even some early radishes, carrots can be a good crop right around now. And certainly some of the more sustainable foods like taro and sweet potatoes, too. Sunday for full moon, and Monday the moon enters Libra, an air sign, making it time to work with our flower plants. And this is definitely the ideal time of the year to get the mammoth sunflowers going and growing, as they like to reach their highest peak around summer solstice. This gives them about a month and a half to really put on some height before those flowers come in. And I consider this to be the best time of year for planting those particular ones.
Excellent. And so this would be a good time for sowing the seed or putting the transplants in?
Either. And direct seeding, more seeds than you need, and thinning is definitely the way to go, because the genetics are pretty variable, sunflowers being a highly cross-pollinating crop. Mm-hmm. You want, if you really want the giant, best to throw down a bunch of seeds and thin out to your tallest specimens.
Right.
And certainly grow a bunch of them out if you plan to collect seed yourself. Be prepared to do battle with the cardinals.
I was going to say the birds may help you even in the seedling stage to help you thin those direct seeded sunflowers as well.
That's right. That's right.
And we need to be aware, too, that sunflower is almost certainly one of the crops that's being grown as a genetically modified organism here on the island of Kauai. So if we find ourselves in the southern or western part of the island, just to be of note, if we're thinking of seed saving, good to get more educated about where those GMO sunflowers might be growing, and to ensure that we're not inadvertently breaking any patent laws by saving seed. Certainly that is a consideration.
Yeah, no doubt. And this is the good time. So seed growers all around of any kind would be thinking about growing them right now. And then Tuesday next, Cinco de Mayo, if you don't feel like taking the day off and having a party, the moon will be in Scorpio, a water sign, making it a good time to plant some leaf plants. So we've got these summer greens, for some reason, bok choy is big on my mind right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the Asian greens are just doing so well. Mustards.
Yes, loving them for sure. Growing up fast with the ever-increasing daylight of the days now. It's certainly an exciting time to be a gardener, a farmer. Great news to report from our good buddy Ken Lindsay, who's just standing out in his field every day, harvesting, planting, and just we were lucky enough to have him in as a guest when he had just established his new field up there in the Kilauea area. And he is pulling off some beautiful crops of vegetables of every description. So hats off to you, Ken, and everyone who's getting their hands dirty out and getting our hearts full of joy from being able to eat a bunch of beautiful produce.
Yeah, and bringing it to the farmer's market so that it's accessible to more and more people. It's just a wonderful thing we got going on here. I say we look to that solution more and more.
We shall. And while it's great to go even as a weekly pilgrimage to the farmer's market to get much of the produce that we love to enjoy, it's also great to have some plants ready on hand right outside the back door or somewhere very nearby so we can access them each and every day, or sometimes in case of emergency. It's great to have plants, and oftentimes those plants belong in the beautiful medicine chest that we imagine is this beautiful ornate wooden locker box that we keep our medicines in. But in reality, here in Hawaii, we don't have to lock our medicines away. They do best flourishing each and every day, year round, even in our gardens. And so we're going to focus in on one of those beautiful members today, and we've made mention of it already. And this is the nioi, otherwise known as the Hawaiian chili pepper.
Yes, and it is botanically known as Capsicum frutescens. And it's pretty much related to the Thai chili, but with a giant form indicated of growing up and adapting to the subtropics as a perennial, as it does here. And interestingly enough, it's capsaicin content, which is sort of the more precise unit of measurement of the pepper's heat, more precise, that is, than Scoville units, is controlled by genetics and by its environment, but it did test out as the highest levels of capsaicin of any of the peppers that are grown in the Hawaiian Islands, even outdoing the habanero, which I found interesting.
I saw that as well, and I thought that was quite interesting. And they are certainly smaller than a habanero, but boy, do they pack a punch. They're great. It's always that balance between wanting to incorporate hot chili peppers for the flavor, but then also not wanting to add too much so that we just wallop ourselves with the heat. And the capsaicin that Robin is referring to is concentrated in the seeds, as well as that white membrane that's inside the pepper. So if you're preparing nioi for a dish, gutting it essentially like you would a fish, and removing all of those parts, the seed and the white membrane inside, will give you the best chance at incorporating more flavor and less heat. But there's really no getting around the heat. And that's a good thing, because it's actually quite healthful for us in many ways. Nioi, high in vitamin A and C, antioxidants, which of course counter free radicals in our body. It stimulates the metabolism by lowering triglyceride levels. Not really sure what they are, but it's good to keep them low, it seems. It can
I believe they're related to cholesterol.
Okay. That's right. Can block the transmission to the spinal cord from, it blocks pain from transmission from the skin to the spinal cord, which is eventually where we feel it, which makes it good for controlling pain from cold sores, shingles, or other types of herpes, as well as arthritis. It has cancer-preventing properties. It protects us from food-borne bacteria. I remember being told many years ago that part of the reason there are so much hot chilies in some of the south of the border foods is because sometimes it's difficult to keep, without refrigeration, to keep meat products maybe as fresh as we might normally, and so that the hot peppers are put in there to actually prevent foodborne illness.
Oh, interesting.
It also has the miraculous quality of clotting the blood, both outside and inside the body in case of internal or external hemorrhaging. But paradoxically, it increases blood flow when the blood is inside the blood vessels where it belongs. And as a result, it prevents blood clots. It's also antiseptic, has many other beneficial properties. We turn often to our Kumu Lavan Ohai, our dearly departed practitioner of La'au Lapa'au, traditional Hawaiian medicinal practice, and he considered nioi one of the master herbs, and often used in conjunction with other herbs to make them more powerful. And in water, food, medicine, many ways to take this herb, just chopping up some nioi and placing them in your water bottle. I know some of the students really got into that habit. Of course, we can add it as a culinary herb and adding that medicinal benefit to our food, but also in those medicinal preparations where we're extracting the cocoa or blood of other medicinal herbs by putting them in a blender. We can pop a couple nioi in there, and the recommendation is kind of as hot as you can get it, if you will. It's exceptional at clearing the sinuses. A little bit of hot chili pepper water snorted up your nose, which, yes, could be temporarily unpleasant. Has powerful effects. It also, because it stimulates circulation, it's also good for the eyes. And for anybody who's ever gotten chili pepper in their eyes.
My eyes are watering right now just thinking about it.
Again, not necessarily a pleasant feeling. However, it's very, very beneficial for the health of the eye because it stimulates circulation and can even counteract early stages of blindness, or so it is reported.
Wow, interesting. I know that I do like adding it to the cocoa type preparations, mainly because sometimes those herbs are a bit bitter, and the spiciness of the ni'oi kind of just sort of dissipates some of the bitterness for me and gives my mouth something else to think about than the bitter taste.
Yum, yum. Well, it's getting my mouth watering just thinking about enjoying some of it. I did want to mention one more herbal remedy, and this thanks to an herbal practitioner who we've mentioned on the show last month, Dr. Christopher. HerbalLegacy.com has a lot of the wisdom that he compiled over the 20th century, in the 20th century, about herbal medicine. And he is one of the sources of a treatment to actually prevent heart attack. And I imagine this would be a heart attack based on a blood clot. And according to his experience, if you can get a tea, a warm tea of chili pepper into the patient when they're first experiencing a heart attack, or even if they're unconscious, placing chili pepper underneath their tongue can prevent a heart attack from taking the patient. And this was also a practice that Kumu Ohai ascribed to, and he said that he never traveled anywhere without ni'oi because it was such a lifesaver.
Wow, incredible. Well, lucky we have so much of it growing around the island. There's old growth, almost tree types growing near people's homes, and it's a great one to be propagating. Certainly the cardinals do their fair share, I'm sure, of propagating it. If you have a plant in your yard and you've noticed that the ripe peppers are kind of disappearing, guaranteed it's the cardinals who must be just the healthiest birds out there. Maybe that's why they're red, now that I think about it. But they'll, I'm sure, drop some seeds around as well when they do their duty as they fly around.
Certainly must be why it's called the bird pepper. And part of the reason it's so effective, or the birds are so effective at dispersing it, is because this particular pepper bush holds its fruit aloft, pointed up toward the birds, rather than many of our peppers that actually have a pendulous or hanging fruit. So the birds don't have to work too hard. It's just right there as a buffet for them to enjoy. And I was lucky enough to see an ancient is perhaps a bit too much to say, but an elder ni'oi plant when I was on one of the outer islands of the Tahitian Islands, and visited the local apothecary with my host at the time, who was in his early 30s, and he said that when he was a boy, he used to go by this store, and sure enough, the same pepper bush was growing, and it was such a magnificent specimen. So with care, these plants can last a long time, but like many of our plants, they are susceptible to nematode. And so that would certainly be a limiting factor of their survival here in the Hawaiian Islands.
Well, that falls in line with my experience in growing peppers, is that they really don't like to be in a very wet soil at all. They prefer more dryness and short, infrequent water, or frequent but shallow waterings is actually what I meant to say. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting, I don't know if have you seen what I call the wild form? So these must be, you know, maybe bird droppings mm-hmm. that gave rise. And the peppers are very tiny.
Mm-hmm.
Same plant, but with extremely small peppers. And to me, it seems like a reversion of this sort of cultivated one that, when just left to grow out in the environment, just doesn't have enough whatever it is to make those big peppers.
They're bird size.
I suppose you're right.
It's a bird serving.
Seems like they could have one or two seeds in them at best. They're
right.
So small.
Right.
Yeah, so you have seen those.
Yes, I have. Well, give thanks for the ni'oi, the fact that it has become naturalized here in the Hawaiian Islands. I mistakenly thought that it was a canoe plant, because it's been hanaid or adopted by the Hawaiian traditional culture so warmly, in the same way that aloe, the aloe plant, has. But unlike uala, the sweet potato, which also originates from South America, the ni'oi did not arrive to Hawaii, it's thought, until Cook, the time that Captain Cook arrived. But it is one of those great examples of a plant that, when Christopher Columbus brought it back to Europe, it spread like wildfire and became a, a really foundational piece of cuisine throughout India, Asia, and then the Pacific Islands as well.
Yeah, all those solanums, actually. But that's a whole nother conversation.
Right now, we're joined by our great friend and regular contributor to the program, Adam Asquith. Adam's a taro farmer in the Ahupua'a of Kealia. He's an extension specialist for the University of Hawaii Sea Grant College Program. He assists communities on Kauai with water, conservation, sustainable agriculture, and energy issues. And today we get to talk about some of the most pressing issues for Hawaii and that of the impact of climate change. Adam, thanks for joining us.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for putting this discussion on the table. It's really, really important. And I don't think, things like this tend to be, it's easy to put off as if it's not real and it's not going to happen. So, important.
Indeed it is. And it's funny that we hadn't really connected the dots until the show finally came together. But interestingly, you're an extension instructor for the UHC grant program, which was also responsible for a major report released last year, Climate Change Impacts in Hawaii, a summary of climate change and its impacts to Hawaii's ecosystems and communities. And
let me first confess that I'm a biologist by training. I'm not a geologist or a climatologist. But as extension agents, we kind of take the information that those guys produce and then kind of disseminate it to the public. So I'm sufficiently science literate to be able to interpret and share that stuff out of that.
Yes, thank you. And certainly we need not only the raw data, but we need people who are smart enough to synthesize all the information and come up with some sense that we lay people can understand. So what is your understanding of where we're at and what kind of impacts are we looking at, even in the present moment as well as time going on?
Yeah, so I think it's important, the two most important things for people to understand kind of at the very general level is that one is that climate change is real, it is happening, and we have measurable changes over the last half century to demonstrate that. So there's no question that it's happening and that it's being measured. So the flip side of that is particularly for here in Hawaii, where we have extraordinarily variable rainfalls in particular, is that it's very difficult to determine exactly what those impacts are going to be and the scale of them.
Mm-hmm.
We know it's happening. We know it's going to impact us, but it's very, very difficult to assess and determine exactly what that's going to be. And I'll give you a little bit some examples. The primary way that climate change is going to affect Hawaii is through sea level rise. And sea level rise is going to affect the islands differently within Hawaii. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Maui is probably going to be affected the most. And the reason for that is as the islands build, right, they have this big, massive collection of volcanoes on the Big Island. The weight of those mountains actually push the mantle of the earth down, even as the plate moves, northwest. So even without sea level rise, the islands actually sink. And Maui is still sinking, right? Because of the weight of volcanoes. Then at the same time, you begin to add sea level rise from climate change. And Maui, because unlike the Big Island, Maui has lots of low-lying coastal areas in Kahului and Kealia and so forth. they are probably the most susceptible in Hawaii to sea level rise due to climate change. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because they're getting the double whammy. They're getting the the first punch of natural island subsidence due to the weight, and then on top of that, sea level rise, which we know is happening, and which we know is going to increase further. It's just the rate and extent is a little bit unknown, but it doesn't take very much. So the best, let's continue that blowing back up a second. So as we move down the island chain, after the weight of those volcanoes, that volcanic mass, after it begins to erode, the mantle actually bounces back up a little bit, and the islands begin to rise.
Hmm.
So here on Kauai, the mantle is beginning to bounce back up. So the prediction here on Kauai is that we might actually almost offset on Oahu and not so much Oahu, but Kauai, maybe offset the sea level rise a little bit with this bounce.
Wow.
So we might not be in as bad a shape as Maui, but Maui needs to give a lot of thought to how they're going to deal with sea level rise due to climate change.
Some of the folks who live right on the coast, I mean, literally, 100 yards from the ocean will probably be the most affected, I would think. But there's probably other effects, too, that are a little more hidden.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like major. I mean, if you look at Kahului, it's the major port and industrial and commercial center for Maui. And I'll give you a good example. Their sewage treatment plant is, right within a few hundred yards of the ocean and probably, 3 feet above sea level.
Right.
So they need to, and they are. They're on top of it, County of Maui and so forth, and they're beginning planning to move all their infrastructure. We have some similar places here at Wailua. We have the sewage treatment plant at Lydgate, which is not very high above sea level, and we've got some sumps in Wailua that already have some difficulties.
Hmm.
So these coastal, whether it's potable water or wastewater systems that we put in the infrastructure right at the coast, are going to be immediately susceptible and have the largest kind of community-wide impact.
Hmm. Yes, it seems that we humans put our focus or concentrate our toxic elements right at the coastline with the Fukushima nuclear plant, all of the petroleum resources that are stored there because of shipping. We've really set ourselves up in a global context for some pretty large-scale devastation of the coastal environments due to, all these toxins potentially being ruptured and released.
Yes. It's as strange as it's, maybe it's not strange. Governments have very difficult time dealing with that kind of long-term planning because, once you begin building in an area, it's difficult to kind of shift, and then budgets don't correspond with these kind of long-term climate change processes. But particularly, I would give credit to, Maui County in particular, because they've really, they've funded a lot of the science behind this, the local science, and they are incorporating it into their county ordinances and their planning. And I think Kauai is also just beginning to. Kauai actually has followed suit with regard to funding some of the science and the ordinances with regard to shoreline setback, which is part of that same process. Now, I don't think they really incorporated some of the newest data on sea level change in that, but that's coming also.
Well, hopefully we'll pick up the pace there.
Yeah. So that's probably the most obvious and significant effect, because we're already seeing that happen. A couple of other things that we might see that, particularly here on Kauai, are like the Hanapepe salt bed. From a cultural perspective, it's a very narrow range of hydrology down there with regard to sea level and freshwater coming in that make those salt beds work.
Yes.
And there's been some discussion about that, about what to do about that important cultural processing location down there. The other place that we'll see that are very low-lying agricultural areas, and I can speak to that directly. At my farm this morning at Teodia, I had water coming in the outflow of my taro patches because the river, so it's not that the sea level the sea level, due to the strong trade winds and wave action, has backed up the river mounds to the point where the river is backed up and pushing back into the taro patches. So we will see more and more of that. You know, if my children and grandchildren continue to farm there, they may have to manage that area as fish ponds, for example. It may be too low to continue farming over the next complete century.
And is that a new phenomenon if we look at the past 2,000 years of cultivation of the Hawaiian Islands, that this inundation of salt water into the low-lying areas like you're describing, is that new, or are there waves of this activity occurring?
No, so it's also important for people to understand is that over millennia, thousands of years, and then tens of thousands of years, you know, sea level goes up and down, right? In fact, when Polynesians arrived in Hawaii maybe 1,500 years ago, if they had arrived just another maybe 500 years earlier, particularly here on Kauai and Oahu, the sea level had bounced up a little bit. It was already probably about, 3 feet higher. So when the Polynesians arrived in their canoes, they would have if you look at like the tree line, all the low-lying floodplains of Hanalei and Kealia and Wailua, those would have been larger bays and bayments, right? And we know that because if you dig down, as taro farmers do, this thin layer of topsoil that can be anywhere from 6 inches to, let's say, 3 feet deep, you'll encounter the calcium carbonate marine sand. So we know the ocean was there because that's what deposits. In fact, we even have reefs inland. One of the most clear places to see that is when you drive over the one-lane bridge over Waioli Stream from Hanalei over to Waipa. And if you don't stop on the bridge, then you stop before or after the bridge and walk out, and you look down and you can see what looks like a rock formation in the stream bed, and it's only about 3 feet down. That is an old reef, and old. I mean, with only a few thousand years old. So at one time, all of Hanalei Valley, that Makai Valley, was Hanalei Bay. So, long answer to the question that yes, the ocean has bounced up and down, even within the time that the Polynesians have been here. So it has essentially retreated.
Yes. We're speaking with Adam Asquith here on In the Garden on the Farm. Adam is a taro farmer. He's also a researcher and a biologist with the UHC grant program. And we're talking about climate change and the impacts here on the island of Kauai. A great resource out there that I discovered on the Internet, Climate Change Impacts in Hawaii. A summary of climate change and its impacts to Hawaii's ecosystems and communities is a report, a pretty new report released last year by UHC Grant. And funny enough, it was prepared for the Hawaii Tourism Authority, but unfortunately didn't have too good news to share about the impacts to tourism and as well to the way of life for people who live here each and every day of the year in Hawaii.
Yeah, Adam, one of the significant things in that paper was a decrease in prevailing northeast trade winds, which I was so happy to read because it's something I've been noticing, given that I live on the northeast side and the trades are just not as consistent as they used to be. And that's got to be contributing to the rainfall decline and all the things that sort of trickle down from just that change in trade winds more towards an easterly flow. But I don't understand exactly, how that change is happening. I wondered if you know anything about that.
So I'm glad you brought that up. So the two other aspects of rainfall or water as it pertains to the effects of climate change in Hawaii is the the decrease in change of the northeast trade winds, which you just mentioned. So we've been able to, people have been able to measure that, and it's demonstrable. So it's not. And when you think about how variable winds can be, the fact that we can actually measure that change and that decrease is really significant. And in, on top of that, and probably as a result of that, we've also documented a decrease in rainfall patterns, total rainfall over the last half century here in Hawaii also. Whether, you know, those are probably linked, but in addition, and it's going to be hard to explain, and I don't know if I can do it, as to why that happens. You know, there are these large-scale weather patterns in the Pacific, including El Nino and, you know, anti-cyclones and so forth that drive some of these large weather patterns. The other thing, in addition to the trade wind and the trade wind rainfall pattern, is it is predicted that our Kona storms will decrease also. So we can expect, in general, we can expect changes in wind patterns and storm patterns and higher variability of rainfall, but overall less rainfall in Hawaii. And that's about all we can say, because as you know, our rainfalls are so variable from, you know, 130 inches in Hilo to, you know, what, 20 inches in Kekaha or something.
Right. So some people want more rain, some people want less, some people are happy to stay where they are. And it seems like we might be getting some of all of that, depending on how things go. And the big uncertainty of rainfall, yet it seemed to me, after reading this paper, that it sounded like we were going to keep more rain than maybe I had been led to believe by a previous analysis from a few years ago that suggested that the surface sea temperature would push the inversion layer of clouds above the point at which they would be caught by the Hawaiian mountains, and resulting in perhaps a dramatic reduction of rainfall of up to 70% in the next 100 years or so. I didn't see any reflection of that kind of analysis in this latest paper, which was a relief. But I'm not sure if that's still something that people are considering.
No, I think that, you know, a lot of that stuff, let me back up a second, is that what we're talking about both, climate and climate patterns and changes and weather patterns and changes. Both of those are highly variable and very difficult to predict. So I think most of the researchers and certainly people that are like me that are interpreting and sharing information, you know, want to stick to some very kind of general patterns that are, you know, everybody would agree we're fairly confident about. So, and I think that level of confidence indicates that we're going to have much more variability in the rainfall, but overall reduced trade wind or consistency in trade wind pattern, which is probably linked to the reduction in trade wind rainfall. But some of the kind of, you know, numbers that are put out in specific papers, those will come and go as we get more data. But none of the data suggests that things are going to continue as usual. We're gonna see less rainfall and effects on our groundwater systems, both from sea level rise and recharge.
Yes, it does. And, you know, I've checked out lots of research out there about climate change, and certainly they're not all in agreement about everything, which it would be impossible to be. But we can be in agreement about what some of the solutions are, some of the ways that we can prepare ourselves or be prepared for whatever may come. And certainly one of those things is water catchment. So we thought maybe we could transition the conversation a little bit into some water catchment ideas and solutions, and we wanted to know what you think about that.
I think, and I we recently had a water catchment kind of expert here on Kauai that conducted a workshop. It was primarily for kind of county and planning folks, and I was not able to attend, but there are other U.S. grants, Ruby Path was involved in that. Anyway, the upshot is that there are other places in the U.S. that have fully engaged, embraced water catchment systems for community-wide, both individual residences and commercial industrial settings have been quite successful. And so the technology is there. It's just we haven't embraced it because for two reasons. One is, particularly here on Kauai, we have in general our lack of water, right, and haven't really encountered water issues.
Sure.
Even without, you know, these climate change reductions. Now, that's changed already. We have clearly, particularly in the Lihue area, in the Molokai area, and so forth, we're encountering water issues without the climate change factor. So I just kind of both on a personal and professional note, I think it's important for us both as kind of individuals, as homeowners, to think about, wow, where, you know, if I'm gonna stick it out here, and my kids and grandkids need to be thinking of alternatives, and water catchment is the obvious one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so even if water is available to us, sometimes the cost is prohibitive from an agricultural standpoint for people.
Sure.
And I was interested to discover, in looking into catchment, that it's actually not regulated by the Department of Health, so they don't have any restrictions against using it. That being said, there certainly, if catchment is being used for potable water source, there's lots of things that can contaminate the water, and that it's very important that measures be taken along every step of designing the system, maintaining the system, periodic testing of the water, periodic cleaning of the system to ensure that it's safe. And even if we're making a system that's mostly for agricultural use, it's always a good idea to keep the contaminants in the system as safe as possible, even to handle. But it was good to see that it's not illegal to do. Certainly, it's been estimated that 30 to 60,000 people in Hawaii County depend on water catchment for their potable water use. And also interesting to see that the perhaps as an indication of where the County Department of Water for Kauai goes, I went on their website, and there's not a single mention in the rules and regulations or anywhere on their website the words rain or water catchment don't exist on their website, so it still doesn't seem to really even be on their radar.
No, it. So I would. So I just want to confirm that it's only Kauai or the older islands that haven't used catchment. Frequently, as you mentioned, on the Big Island and areas like Puna, where water isn't readily available, this is the way people have done it for decades. So they're not only individuals, but they're entire companies that know how to do this. They do it every day. So we have people and resources in Hawaii to guide us on islands like Kauai, where we haven't done it, but we need to start doing it. And I think, as is typical, I think we can look to individuals, particularly farmers and people who purchase properties that don't have access to county or private systems, to be the leaders in this. And then hopefully the Department of Water and the government will kind of come along as they see the light.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with farms and, you know, just in a general sense, are you familiar with people who've set up catchment systems here on Kauai? I'm not asking you to call them out by name, but have you seen successful systems for agricultural use here on Kauai?
No, I have not actually yet. Because again, we've in general, we've been blessed in the past, and so we haven't really had to do that. So I'm not familiar with any of that yet.
I read that one of the benefits of using catchment water for agriculture specifically is that it contains few to no salts, which can be hard on plants. And especially with that consideration of climate change, rising sea levels, inundation of the coastal areas, bringing seawater into potentially the groundwater resources, it seems like an especial good match for what we're facing.
Yeah, you know, and that's something to think about kind of in the long run, because people may or may not know even fresh water has irrigation water from streams has measurable amounts of salt in it, not enough to necessarily affect plants in the ground, but over time, and I mean long, long periods of time, particularly when we irrigate high evaporative areas, dry areas like Kekaha on the west side and so forth, the evaporation of that irrigation water on the surface leaves those the salt behind, and we can actually salinate large agricultural areas. In fact, we've done that as humans over time, particularly in the Middle East, Central Valley, California, Arizona. These are areas where we have or are in the process of losing agricultural land due to salinization of our irrigation water.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, as homeowners or homesteaders or so forth, direct rainfall that hasn't come, hasn't leached some of those salts from the soils on its way down from the mountains is probably going to be lighter on that salinization process.
So I'm curious to know if you're aware of any federal programs. I heard a story, and unfortunately I didn't get the detail, from a friend who said that he thought he had heard that there were some sort of cost-sharing programs on the federal level to help people set up water catchment systems. Have you heard any of that going on?
Oh, I have not. Like I said, that might have come up at the workshop, but I wasn't able to attend that, so I'm not familiar with that
possibility. Okay, well, thank you so much. It's been great to have you on, Adam Asquith, a much treasured member of our community, perpetuating the Hawaiian culture through your tarot, your education, growing the beautiful and beloved haloa, the kalo plant, and perpetuating the values that we love. We miss having you on the radio on a semi-weekly basis. Hope you'll return in that capacity. And thanks so much for taking some time to share your knowledge with us.
Well, thank you guys for providing this show and all the information that you bring and disseminate. And I'm happy to participate anytime. So
thank you
for the opportunity.
Hey, one follow-up question which occurred to me was, I had heard that the horizontal well drilling project, which many people think was taken offline, was actually renamed and is still happening. Do you know what's going on there?
I think they pulled my understanding is that the Department of Water pulled the plug on kind of the funding for that. So that I don't believe that they're actively pursuing that right now.
Mm-hmm.
But that does mean that it's off. It hasn't been nixed with regard to their larger planning process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully if we pursue more sustainable solutions like water catchment, we won't have to make that kind of a compromise to our natural resources and to the cultural values of this island.
You're here.
Oh, well, thanks, Adam.
Thank you so much, guys.
Aloha.
All right, aloha.
Well, that was a great chat with Adam.
Yeah, so glad he could join us.
Me too. Well, water catchment's so interesting. We recently had some gutters put on our house and definitely have a plan to catch the water somehow for using, I think, kind of in case of emergency. Not sure we need to plummet through our house lines, but like knowing that it could be there as a backup irrigation source for my gardens. And there are some contractors on Kauai who are involved in water catchment systems. So if you're a homeowner that's interested and don't necessarily have the skills or the wish to do the work yourself, I read that Ready Man Services and also Solar Plus Kauai offer water catchment systems as part of the services they offer.
Mm-hmm. Pretty cool. Hope to see more of those going on. Every time it rains and I see water coming off of any roof, I think, what a precious resource. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we were honoring that resource by capturing it? Want to let people know there's also a great resource online, harvestingrainwater.com, all one word. Harvestingrainwater.com will lead you to a website which is a companion piece to a great pair of books that we actually have at the Seed Bank Library, Rainwater Harvesting for Drylands and Beyond, and has great information about creating swales and working with rainwater catchment in many different ways, but a super resource also on the web.
Yeah, and I like the idea of rainwater harvesting by the plantings themselves, like in the case of swales that you just mentioned, but also something I picked up from Gary Nobin's most recent book was to plant guilds, or what we call here in the islands agroforests. And there's a great agroforestry workshop coming up, to plant guilds or agroforests so that the plants can actually help one another by shading them or helping kind of maintain a water reservoir for the whole planting. Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty cool.
It's so fun to see our landscape as a beautiful palette that we can incorporate many of these ideas and make highly productive. And we will survive climate change one way or another. Let's do it in style. Let's do it cooperatively with nature. And just time for some announcements. Can you share what's going on in the gardening world here on Kauai with us, Robin?
Would be my honor to do so. So Saturdays, May 2nd and 9th, there'll be home gardening classes offered at the Kauai Community College from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. May 2nd will be about soil preparation and fertilizers, and May 9th, insect pests and plant diseases. The class will be presented by Master Gardener Instructor and UH Extension Agent Richard Ibisu. And if you're interested to register, you can call KCC's Office of Continuing Education and Training at 245-8318. We also have an Introduction to Beekeeping class with Jimmy Trujillo, Saturdays, May 9th and May 16th, 9 to noon and 9 to 1 p.m. respectively, at the Kauai Community College Bee Lab. This two-session course is for beginners, hobbyists, and people wanting to know more about beekeeping. The first lab lecture class covers hive equipment, basic protective equipment, honeybee biology, and how to get started. The final session is in the apiary, where participants will inspect various hives in the college apiary. Students will need closed-toed shoes for the field day, please. Protective equipment, veil, jacket, and gloves is provided. For more information about this course, you can give KCC a call at 245-8318. And online registration for OSET classes is now available. Just do a web search for Kauai OSET. That's O-C-E-T. KKCR's Spring 2015 Pledge Drive is coming up as well from May 11th to May 21st. Become an early bird for a chance to win a two-night stay at Hanalei Bay Resort. Renew your KKCR membership today and be a KKCR early bird or sustaining member. You can make your tax-deductible donation to Kauai Community Radio by May 10th of this couple weeks here, and you'll automatically be entered into our early bird drawing. The drawing winner will receive a two-night stay at the Hanalei Bay Resort in Princeville. And donations may be mailed in, called in, or donate online. Become a member or renew your membership. Pledge your support by becoming a member or renewing your membership by going to the kkcr.org website and click the Donate tab. Become a Wave Rider and have your brief message aired during every live two-hour program for the duration of our 11-day pledge drive. Wave Rider forms are available at the KKCR website.
If you'd like to have your agriculturally related announcement or event mentioned on air, please email it at least a couple of weeks in advance to inthegardenonthefarm@gmail.com. To hear previous broadcasts of the show, go to kkcr.org, click the audio archive tab at the top of the page. And thanks so much to Laura Christine for posting all of our shows previous, as well as the other members of the In the Garden on the Farm team, our engineer Jack, our phone tech Mac, and our station manager Dean. Thanks you guys for keeping us on the air, as well as to all of our listeners. This has been In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts Paul and Robin. We'd like to thank our guest on the show today, Adam Asquith. Please tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life. Aloha.
Aloha.